Those are big steps to take. No pun intended. My name's Jill. I'm an alcoholic. Does it sound okay? Am I too loud?
Perfect.
Thank you, Steve. I want to thank the committee and our friend Steve P. for inviting Jerry and I to be here this weekend. We usually do the Lake Tahoe Fall Festival, and I have to tell you, you guys are way more top-notch. It's so organized. It's so beautiful. I love their centerpieces. So that's all. Thank you. No. My name's Jill Kay, and I'm an alcoholic. I grew up in an alcoholic home, and I thought it was all my fault. My dad was a verbally abusive drinker, and my mom was an obsessed Al-Anon. I was the oldest, am the oldest of three girls. Ooh, I just got nervous. Probably one of my first thoughts I remember is, I will never be like my dad. And I didn't realize it was the alcohol. I just thought he was mean. He went to work every day, and that was always his excuse. I'm not an alcoholic, I go to work every day. Well, he would come home from work, and the martinis would start, and everything would just unravel, and I grew up full of fear, anxiety, insecurity, and I just had this thing. I wanted to fix the family. I didn't have a conscious thought of that, but I just felt, you know, that I've got to do something. So the minute I could drink, I did. I was in eighth grade, and I went to Las Vegas to my best friend's mom's wedding, and we were across the street from the Circus, and we had a bottle of cold duck, and we snuck it, and we ran down the street, and I remember taking just a big guzzle of that, and all of a sudden, I could breathe. I felt kind of normal. I felt like you all looked, you know, in my little elementary school, and it was just the biggest relief. And the minute I could drink again, I did. And I grew up in Orange County in the 70s. It was sex, love, and rock and roll. And we would go down to the beach parties. We'd go to the beach parties, and we would decide where we were going to go based on how many keggers. Is that a two-kegger party? Is it a three, four? So my sister and I would just go crazy, just driving around. My dad would always give us his car. I think he just wanted us out. And we would just party and drink. And I was a blackout drinker from day one. And it didn't scare me. I wanted to know, oh, you know, where did we end up? And who did I kiss? And, you know, it was just crazy. And I remember I would wake up, and I always wanted this canopy bed. I think from day one, I had those feelings like if I could make the outside look good, then I would be okay on the inside. Now, I didn't have that conscious thought, but I was driven that way, even as a kid. So I had to have that canopy bed. And I remember waking up with my clothes, the same clothes I had gone out in the night before, missing my favorite sweater. And I would look down, and there were Jack-in-the-Box wrappers, because that was the only fast food place that, you know, you could drive through in the 70s. And I just, I felt awful. I felt empty, and I started to seek that outside validation. And along with it just came as much alcohol and drugs as we could get. And, I could never look you in the eye, but I needed you. I needed your approval. I needed the world to tell me I am okay. I didn't have 1 ounce of self-esteem. I couldn't look at you in the eye when I talked to you. I became a cheerleader, homecoming. I needed that validation, but I was a shell of a person, an alcoholic girl in high school with blackouts, and it got worse. crashed my dad's car, going through a fence, and I made up a big lie. My dad calls the police. Well, we need to make a police report about this. And so my sister and I made up this huge story of how this truck stopped, and we just plowed into it, when really we were drinking Schlitz malt liquor, driving up and down the 405 freeway, toasting the Beatles and Rolling Stones weekend. Just drunk, drunk, drunk. And we blew through a fence at the end of Culver Drive, if you know Orange County. Just blew the gate off. And we went to Coco's, and we're like, oh my God, and we were just drinking coffee before we went home. What are we gonna tell Dad? You know, and that's my drinking. That's my alcoholic life in a nutshell. Except for my parents started putting me in mental hospitals. They would always feel better if they knew where I was. And I did do drugs, and I did drink. I didn't eat, I didn't sleep. That does not make for a winning, healthy child. And so I was a mess. They put me in, it was Santa Ana Psychiatric Hospital, and I was happy to be there. There were other teenagers. I had a roommate. I felt safe. For the first time in my life, I felt safe. And I think I was there a week, and my sister and I were saying, oh, we have to stop drinking. You know, we'll only smoke pot during the week, and then on the weekends, we'll only drink. So at a really young age, I had a feeling, I thought maybe my drinking was out of control. Long story short, I drank 10 more years. My sister, who was my drinking buddy, passed away from type 1 diabetes and alcoholism in 1982. And that was a wake-up call for me. I felt guilty. I felt like I should have saved her. You know, I felt like it was all my fault, and my parents were completely shattered. That's when my anxiety was so bad I couldn't drive on the freeways. But I met a guy in Orange County. He lived in Long Beach, and all of a sudden, Jill can drive the freeways. So I made a geographic to Long Beach, moved in with him 1 week after knowing him. Sorry, honey, my husband doesn't know a lot of these details, but I guess it's gonna be on tape now. And this guy, my new boyfriend, happened to be going to outpatient at Memorial Hospital in Long Beach. And he said, he goes, oh, my wife won't go with me, which I hate to even say out loud. He said, will you go? And I need a codependent to go. He needed someone to go with him. And I said, okay. What's your last name again? No, but so we ended up in meetings, outpatient meetings at Memorial in Long Beach, and I remember thinking, what am I doing? You know, I wasn't working. We were living at the Beachtown Motel in the traffic circle in Long Beach. Steve probably knows, you know where that is, And this guy, he was going to meetings with a man named Fred Peters, God rest his soul, who started picking him up. And he says, leave her at the motel. I'm like, well, I want to go. You know, I don't want to just sit here and watch TV or whatever. And finally, I convinced them to take me to a meeting. It was the Bowling Green meeting. I think it's Monday nights. It was outside. We sat in the front row. A lady got up, and she told my story. And I was shocked. This is crazy, but I kind of thought, well, maybe they told her to tell my story to get my attention so I would clean up my life. You know, maybe she's a decoy to help me. That's how nutty I was. And I went up to her afterwards, and I said, oh, my gosh. You know, the feelings were the same. She'd been in a few mental hospitals. And she seemed to be functioning. And that was the first time I felt like I wanted what she had. And I felt hope. But honestly, you guys, I thought, I can't be an alcoholic. You know, I was a cheerleader. I can't, you know, my ego almost killed me one more time. So we started going to meetings together, and I had a self-appointed sponsor, Colleen Kennedy. The first thing she did, she goes, "You need a sponsor." I'm like, "Oh, really?" I was 29 years old. She hands me a baby rattle. She goes, "This is about as good as it gets for you. You need to grow up. You are spoiled. You're whiny. You're acting like a victim." I grew up in an alcoholic home. You know, it's not my fault. All that victimization, if it wasn't for the parents, if my sister didn't die, you know, my life would be perfect. That's what I thought. And that was in, 1982, 1983. Well, I had a slip. I went out, ended up at Marineland. They serve beer and wine at Marineland then. And my boyfriend and I just got wasted. It was Veterans Day, 1984. And we came back to the apartment. He ended up falling through the plate glass window. I mean, it was just chaos. It was always drama. Part of me liked the drama. Part of me was drawn to that chaos because I felt comfortable, sadly comfortable in the chaos. And that was my last drink. That was my very last drink, November 11th, 1984. I met Steve in Long Beach. You have, 3 or 4 months more than me? Well, class of 1984. And Steve had 90 days when I met him in Long Beach at a meeting. And the rest, the last 40 years, have been a roller coaster ride. Welcome if you're new. It gets worse. It, meaning life, the longer you live, the longer we stay sober, stuff happens. It's beyond our control. It's beyond my control. The only consistency, my go-to, is my higher power, the 12 steps, my sponsor. And I got sober. I wanted to have fun. I got sober to enjoy life. And I started saying yes to anything you all suggested because I wanted a life. My life almost ended up behind bars. And my father told me, "You will never get out of here." And it was Metropolitan State Hospital by the end. And honestly, they would go to Disneyland when I was there. Because they could relax. And I'm not kidding. They would all go to Disneyland because their problem was behind bars. I ended up having an amazing relationship with my folks before they passed. And I am so grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous. If I hadn't gotten anything else out of being sober, it was to be there for them at the ends of their lives. And I just, it amazes me, and they both have been gone over 20 years now. And, you know, to become the daughter that they deserved was what I did. I called my sponsor sometimes, and I'd say, "Oh, my dad wants me to come out, and he's having a panic attack." And she would go, "Jill, you drive out there for 2 hours, and you be a daughter." She said, "I don't care how you feel. It doesn't matter. Your feelings are secondary to doing the right thing." And it amazes me to this day that formula works. Take the action, and then the feelings change. Then the good feelings come. I always wanted the good feelings and the right feelings. Then I would do something. Then I would quit drinking. Then I would get a job. Then. And, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous teaches me, it's a program of action. So I started sponsoring people. We used to have dances in Long Beach in the 80s, and we'd have like 200 people on Friday nights. We would stay out all night. It became a program of fun. All I wanted was that high school experience. I still do. I'm almost 70, and I want that high school experience. And guess what? Jerry and I have it a lot of times. We have game night. We go to parades. We go to parties. We do, like, kind of hokey, weird things that kids do, and it's fun. I just wanted a little joy. And you taught me through the steps, through a higher power, there is joy in the moment. There's joy when someone's passing away. There's joy when a house burns down. Our house burned down in 2013, and it was a nightmare. You know, we had to sue Bosch Dishwasher. They fought us. It was just, you know, it's like, geez. But I didn't drink. I wanted relief. So went to a lot of meetings, kept helping newcomers. Because for me, when things hit like that, big things, I want to stop working, not go to meetings. I need to focus on the problem and fix this. Well, what I realized through the old timers, you keep doing your life. You put the problem in its perspective, you still sponsor, you go to work, and in time, taking the right actions, things resolve themselves. I had cancer 17 years ago, and I thought I was gonna die. I picked my songs out. Another One Bites the Dust and Spirit in the Sky. And I'm like, okay. Now, I was so scared that every morning I went to a 7 a.m. meeting in Long Beach at the Marina Pacifica, not to talk about the cancer. I needed to hear hope. I needed to hear recovery and hope, because this program works on any problem, any relationship. And then I met my husband through a sponsee. If you're looking for a relationship, let your sponsees know, and they may call you up and say, I found someone for you. So after a 20-year relationship, 15 years ago, my sponsee, Michelle, calls. She goes, Jill, I have the perfect guy for you. I'm like, yeah, right. And she goes, he's in the program, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, we met, we clicked, we had a lot in common, and we got married 7 years ago up in Lake Tahoe. We had, Steve was there, we had high school friends, our families, and you know what, you guys? We get a life here. We get a life beyond our wildest drunken dreams. And we don't quit before the miracle. I saw a lot of newcomers last night, and you know, we're all here today. That's it, right now. And I love what Father Tom says, God is in the moment. God isn't yesterday, God isn't 5 minutes ago, God isn't tomorrow. God, whatever your higher power is right here with us, with you, right now. And that feeling of safety and security, I could not find at the bottom of a tequila bottle. It's all I wanted was to breathe. I mean, when I was a kid, I would choke out on Kentucky Fried Chicken. Seriously, I go, Mommy, I can't swallow. I mean, I had such high anxiety. I was blowing into brown paper bags even after I quit drinking. It kind of got worse because my feelings weren't numb anymore. But going to the meetings, getting a sponsor, helping a newcomer, I had 90 days, and Miles said, Jill, we're going on a panel. I'm like, I can't go on a panel. I don't have anything to give. And he says, you have 90 days. You have something they don't have. And I went on that panel, and it was the most fulfilling feeling I had ever, ever felt. I felt, it's in the promises, I think it's in the promises. We become members of society. We are a worker among workers, a friend among friends. I'm a sister among my other sister. And I don't know how long I've talked. Feels like,
hours.
Five, till dinner? Till Leo gets here?
10 minutes.
I can't wait to see Father Leo. He officiated our wedding. He's a character. If you haven't heard Father Leo speak, you're in for a real treat tonight. To the newcomers, I will tell you, you do not have to drink or use no matter what. No matter what. We used to go into the prisons in Tehachapi, and I'm telling you, those guys who were in there for murder were some of the happiest, most content members of Alcoholics Anonymous I ever met. They showed me by their actions and their kindness, it doesn't matter about the outside stuff. It really doesn't. I always thought it did. You know, I need Botox and then I'll be happy. I need a new car. I need all this stuff. And I get caught up in it still. I have fears and, you know, we go through life stuff. I'm going through something right now that's a challenge. I lost my job 2 weeks ago and it was a surprise, but not really. And those times are the times that I get to connect to my higher power at a deeper level, a deeper surrender. And my prayers are simple. Okay, God, show me what's next. Please put the right people in my path. Help me be of service. I never wanted to be of service. It was all like, what about me? And giving up that victim mentality is so freeing. Because once I own my issues, once I own my problems, once I see my part, I can't blame anyone else anymore. And the good news in not being able to blame anyone for my supposed misery is I can fix it. If I'm causing it and I own the fact that I am creating this problem, then I and my higher power have the power to change it, to change me. Pause when agitated. I mean, my husband and I can get in some twirling disagreements. And, you know, being in a sober marriage, and I know there are some of you who are in sober relationships and sober marriage, it's a good news, bad news story. Mostly good news. But for us, the way we work our program, he goes to his meetings by himself, I go to mine by myself, and we go to one during the week together. And it's just been a joy. And I have a problem with control, you know. Honey, you need to go talk to somebody about that. But it's a good life. It's a good life. And our higher powers have us. And if someone out here is struggling and you don't believe in a higher power, you feel like you're free falling. I used to get that feeling of free falling and like I'm just gonna splat somewhere. It doesn't happen. There's a safety net. There is a safety net called Alcoholics Anonymous, or NA. Loved your share last night, Sean. It was amazing. And it's all those same feelings. We just use different substances to help ourselves soothe that addiction feeling. You know, being in Alcoholics Anonymous, having a sober family is a gift. It's a gift. I'm really, really grateful. I still go to 3 or 4 meetings a week. I sponsor women. Say yes to life. There was someone in our meeting, and she shared this a few months ago. She goes, I want to say yes to things and situations that people think look stupid. I want to say yes to stuff that's crazy. It has to be legal, and you have to afford it, right? That's what I tell myself. If it's legal and I can afford it, I will do it. And we went on a cruise, which was a gift of the program. I have a stepson who recently got married 3 years ago, and they just had their second baby, so I'm a grandma, never thought I would be. And I ate weird stuff. They serve, if you've been on a cruise, they serve this like rabbit, frog, eel, I don't know. But analogy is an analogy. I want to dabble in anything. I will try anything. And I love the newcomers. My sponsor used to tease me. She goes, oh my gosh, you get the hardest newcomers to sponsor. And I said, I love them. I love those people. Because I relate. You know, it's an inside job. And I think I'm about done. I feel like I've said a lot. And probably not enough. Should I go 5 more hours, Steve? Till Leo gets here?
No.
Fred Peters. There was a guy named Fred Peters in Long Beach, and he was one of those sit down, shut up, and listen. He was frightening, he was tall, he was loud, and this man had a heart of gold. He came to see me once when I was in the hospital, and he goes, honey, it's gonna be okay. It's gonna be okay. Go to meetings, listen, reach your hand out to the newcomer. It's a simple program that will give you an amazing life. And that's all I ever wanted, driving down that 405 freeway, drinking Schlitz malt liquor, looking, you know, for some fun. And I just, again, want to thank everybody here. It's been an amazing conference so far, and that's it for me. Thank you.
I'm Jerry, I'm an alcoholic. I'm gonna let you hear my version of how we met. Yeah, Jill had a friend in AA who, we were having lunch, and she said, I've got a friend for you you need to meet. And like Jill, I was like, oh yeah, okay. And so she called Jill and told her about me, and Jill said it's okay to for her to give me her number. And so I called Jill that night, and we talked for an hour or more. The chemistry was there. And yeah, you know, sometimes she's right. I jokingly call us the Bickersons. You know, we bicker more than we actually fight. But I told Steve yesterday, the reason for our success in our marriage is the God in our lives and this program and Jill's innate ability to always stick out the olive branch. She does that. And that I attribute that to our successful marriage. I grew up in Lake Tahoe, a bi-state community. And as my drinking got worse, I immediately started speaking Vietnamese. And I was telling everyone around me as the consequences of alcohol abuse was bearing down on me, I was saying, if my parents would have never moved to Lake Tahoe, I wouldn't be in this mess today. Because the casinos have 24-hour drinking. There is no last call. So there were times when I would walk out in the morning broke from gambling at 10 in the morning and the sun burning my eyes. Alcohol got in the way of everything. It got in the way of my skiing. I'm a skier. I've skied since I was a little kid. And as my drinking progressed, I started bringing liquor up on the slopes and stashing them in the trees. And it just got harder and harder, so I gave up skiing. It's a natural thing to do. Yeah, I would hide liquor in the trees, and if it snowed, I would lose all that liquor that I would hide in it, because I didn't like people to see me drink. So I'd go ski behind a tree and grab a little half pint of schnapps and take a few hits. But the consequences of my drinking, I had warrants out for my arrest in both California and Nevada. I was doing a lot of shoplifting out of stores for liquor. I was stealing liquor out of stores. There was never enough. And, you know, first of all, those of you that are new, facing consequences as a ramifications from your alcohol abuse, I can promise you that if you stick with this program and you have a sponsor and you work this program, you go to meetings, it will get better in such an amazing way. Because when my drinking had reached a peak and I decided I needed to do something about it, I had warrants out for my arrest in Washoe County, Douglas County, Nevada, Carson City, Carson County, El Dorado County in California, traffic tickets. But the zinger, the one that really pushed me over the edge was I passed out in Harrah's lobby with a bunch of Quaaludes in my pocket. Those of you who don't know, Quaaludes are a very strong sedative, and back then it was a felony controlled substance. So they subsequently charged me with a felony. But he says, Mr. Kramer, I'm noticing that you don't really have a long criminal history. It's just all recent, and that tells me this is perhaps from drugs or alcohol. Am I going down the right path? And I said, yeah. And he started thinking. He says, I'm going to sentence you to 1 year in prison, but I'm going to reduce it down to 30 days with 3 years probation. I skipped out on that jail sentence. And the judge warned me. He says, if you don't show up to start your 30 days, I'll see to it that you do the full. It was 2 years, not one. It was a 2-year sentence. I'll see to it that you do the full 2 years. And I'm going to go right to the end with this, because this is what I'm about to say is for the newcomer. I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous that skipped out on a jail sentence to redeem myself to not do a single solitary day in jail. The judge saw. He saw. And I had a sponsor that, when I think about him, it brings tears to my eyes. He went to these court hearings with me so often that one time, walking into an AA meeting through the parking lot, he sees me off in the distance. He goes, Jerry, is that you? I almost didn't recognize you without your lawyer. And, I can't thank that man enough for all that he did for me. And he was well known in the community, and he got up on the stand in Superior Court in Nevada. And he said things about me that brought tears to my eyes in the courthouse. And, and then I got up on the stand, and the district attorney tore into me really hard. He said, you skipped out on a jail sentence. You're here. You turned yourself in. And I said, yeah, it's a result of the steps in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, if I don't do this, I will end up drinking again and either end up in jail again or die. And I remember him saying to me, how do we know you're not going to drink again? And I said, that is a very good question. I said, I can't guarantee it, because I'm kind of new at all this, and all I've learned is that to not pick up a drink. And it's in the big book, cessation from drinking is but the first step away from a highly strained, abnormal condition. So that was the first step that I took, was abstinence, to clear the fog of alcohol from my brain and start learning how this program works. And, they say the definition of courage is identifying what it is you're afraid of and going through with it anyway. And that's what I had to do with the warrants out for my arrest and with the steps and sponsorship and NAA. It took me right through the problem. And I remember at a high school reunion running into the judge's daughter, and I stopped her and I said, was your dad a judge? Because she had a name tag from the reunion. And she said, yeah. And I said, let me tell you what your dad did for me. And when I told her the story, we both broke down in tears and hugged each other. And, I remember, because I was such a heavy drinker, that all the people that I was drinking with, they would push me away because I got so bad. They didn't want me around them. And I remember when the buzzword around the town was, Jerry isn't drinking anymore. He's not drinking, he's not doing any drugs. And I remember hooking up with a guy that I didn't know him that well, but we had partied together, and he said, so I'm hearing out on the street that you're not drinking anymore. And I said, no. And he said, no drugs, no cocaine, nothing? I said, nothing. And he said, you effing liar. And that was the best backhanded compliment I had had. And because who would have thought, and certainly those that knew me would have never bet that I would have pulled a 180 and turned my life around. And yet, he looked at me in total disbelief. And at that time, I was about 2 years sober. And he just couldn't believe it. It was beyond his comprehension that a guy from Tahoe that he used to party with could go 2 years without any drugs or alcohol. So, you know, I just, in Tahoe, it was a very hedonistic lifestyle. We would, you know, stay up gambling all night and drinking and just tearing it up. And, you know, my health started to suffer consequences. And I went to see a doctor, and my liver enzymes were really high. And, you know, I'm really blessed to be here. And, you know, in Tahoe, Jill's right about her skiing, and she'll take on anything. And I've taken her skiing down some really steep slopes. She's done very well. She's gutsy, very gutsy. I'm running out of things to say. I'm not used to long speakers. I go to meetings now in Palm Springs where we have a timer, and they're real rigid about it. And I was saying to Steve, I said, you know, Steve, brevity is the soul of a good speech. And he said, well, I hope you don't just go up and introduce yourself and sit back down. I do remember when I got sober, I thought I just need to stay away from everyone. And I was going to meetings. I hadn't talked to my parents in like almost a year. And I called up my mom on the phone, and she was in tears. Where have you been? She thought I was probably in jail somewhere or sleeping under a bridge. And I said, Mom, I started going to AA, and I haven't had a drink in almost a year. And I want to come over and see you. And when I knocked on the door, tears just rushed down her face, because she saw the son that she'd always knew I could be, but was afraid I would never get there. And I stayed at her place for about 2 or 3 hours. We hugged and kissed, and I remember as I walked out, she was gasping at what a transformation I had made. And that's the miracle of the program. I'm so blessed. And my dad, I remember saying to my dad on my third AA birthday, I said, you know, Dad, I haven't had any alcohol or drugs or anything in 3 years. And he had tears in his eyes. I know that some of my family members, even they couldn't believe it. They thought I was lying. But you can't look this good and continue drinking. You know, Jill and I went to a friend of mine in Tahoe. We went to he was a bartender, and we went to his memorial service. And all of his patrons in the bar were lifelong smokers and drinkers. And you know, he had passed away, and we were all remembering him and everything. And Jill and I looked around the room, and these lifelong bar customers they looked tore up from the floor up. They were really, really beat up from alcohol. And I remember Jill used to tell me that her sponsor would tell her that the best beauty treatment is sobriety. And, you know, I see it. I see people. You know, that there's a guy in Tahoe who he just can't get sober, and he goes to meetings, and he looks like he's on the verge of dying. And another friend of ours, he passed away, and he's been going to meetings for years and years and years with countless relapses because he never really applied himself. Yeah, it's truly a blessing for me to be here today, and I really shouldn't be because of the way I did things that were just absolutely insane. And I don't know what else there is to say. How long have I been going on? 3 more? Skiing was a big thing in my life. And after I got sober, I went back to skiing. And it's been a real good blessing growing up in Lake Tahoe. It's been a really wonderful thing. I'm out of things to say. I don't know what else to say. I'm going to wrap it up. Thank you.